In brightest day,
in blackest night.
And rarest of what I do. What I do best isn't very nice.
The Comic Culture Radio Show. Chris Owen, Walter Duryle.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. They hear the lamentation of the women.
Welcome to the Comic Culture Radio Show, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting, as always, on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duraglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your blown leads.
Trying to scrape away a possible win at the end of the fourth period.
That was terrible. As, of course, the reference to the Leaf collapse,
yes,
a couple nights
well,
ago.
Well, okay, fourth period, overtime, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. We all caught on.
Well, yeah, yeah, you know. Anyways, what a very disappointing game that was, right? You know, unfortunately, the Leafs did not, they weren't able to pull ahead and win the game at
no,
the very
they weren't.
End.
They know, needed they a six goal lead.
They did,
the third,
apparently.
But
yeah,
they only had a three goal lead.
Yeah, so.
And I know we've canvassed, emails come in. Most comic culture listeners are Leaf fans.
Yes, absolutely. So absolutely.
We feel your pain, listenership.
Yes.
Hey, Chris, but that doesn't mean that you and I are going to stop talking comics.
No, you know what?
That doesn't mean that you and I aren't going to bring it.
You know what? Just because the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't win.
Yeah.
Just because the Vancouver Canucks are out.
Yeah.
Just because Montreal's out doesn't mean that Canadian comic culture has to stop.
Right.
We will continue on to talk about comics, whether in Canada or not.
We will push it through and endeavor.
Press on. That's right. All right.
Neither sleet nor snow
nor
rain. Overtime loss will keep us from our appointed duty of bringing comic culture news to the masses.
To the masses.
Right.
And you know what we like to do? We like to champion the local comic book store because we are all about local comic book stores and helping them out and trying to get the word out there to the masses about comics.
Championing
them. All right, listen.
All right.
Enough talk about that.
Banter. Side. Enough banter.
You know what? We are here to talk about comic books, and we are here to talk about New This Week. And New This Week is, of course, brought to you by the Niagara Comic Con, June 8th and 9th at the Scotiabank Center in Niagara Falls, Ontario. If you get a chance, you really should go down and take a look. Lots of great guests and artists. Oh, Walt
yes,
has something.
You know what? And you and I have said it before. Everybody owes themselves at least one Comic-Con to go to
in their lives
during the year.
Yes.
No, during the year, right? And so if you're listening in the Southern Ontario area or Western New York area, if you're listening.
Yes. And why shouldn't you be?
Yeah. You know, Fan Expo can sometimes be intimidating.
Overwhelming. Yeah.
You know, you're downtown. But listen, Niagara, oh, what a great weekend. You go down there, take the husband.
The husband. Take the husband.
Take the wife.
Yep.
Take somebody down. Go do some gambling.
Yep.
Go see some ballet. you know, and then head down to the Comic-Con, though, too.
And you know what? Go check out the falls while you're down there.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah. By the way, yeah, the falls.
And the falls, you know, that thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you need to, you can leave your significant other for a little bit while they're at the casino.
Or the ballet,
or wherever they happen to, you know, at the slot machines.
Uh-huh.
And go check out the Niagara Comic Con. Lots of great guests and artists are going to be there. And it's going to be a great time.
Including you and me, by the way.
Absolutely, yeah. That's right. I believe we have a signing at booth number...
123.
123, yeah, right. Listen, So we are here to talk about comic books.
We are?
Yeah, we really got to get the show on the road. Talk
I'm sorry,
about go New
ahead.
This Week.
All
New
right.
This Week is, of course, every Wednesday. Every Wednesday, new comic books do come out on the local comic book shelves. And we like to highlight a few of the I won't even say some of the better ones, just some that
just some of the ones.
Some of the ones. Some right. of the ones. All right. Let's start off with Gambit. And that Gambit is one of the Marvel characters. This is Gambit number 12.
Number 12.
This is written by James Asmus and penciled by Clayman, Dexter Soy, and Leonard Kirk. Leonard Kirk, he's a good
Kirk. Good local kid.
Good local kid there. Anyways, I like this issue of Gambit. I thought it was really interesting. Gambit is actually facing off against Tombstone in this one. And
Tombstone.
I always liked Tombstone, and I really like the cover of this one. They've made it like it's a house. It's like when you're a little kid, you build a house of cards.
Yes.
Well, of course, Gambit is known for throwing, individual playing cards that are sort of energized and then they end up, being like a bullet type thing.
Right.
Well, they've played on this whole card thing. And there's a big house of cards and Tombstone and Gambit are at the top, and it's kind of a neat little kind of funky cover,
Funky.
I just really liked it. I thought it was a good idea.
Funky. Yeah. Cole Medina.
Yeah. Great book by Marvel, of course.
And, all right. So that is Gambit number 12. From Marvel. It is at your local comic book shop today.
Yes. And also we've got Age of Ultron Book 8. Now, we haven't really talked a lot about Age of Ultron.
No.
So I thought I'd just kind of bring you up to the speed. Up to the speed. So, of course, Ultron was a creation many years ago by Marvel, a robot-type character, for those of you who are sort of new to the comic book industry.
Late 60s.
And, sort of Ultron has now decided that he's going to try to destroy the Marvel Universe.
Why
this
not,
is,
right?
This is a miniseries based on how the Marvel good guys are trying to fight the bad guys. Basically,
right.
was what it's all about.
Right.
It's written by very popular artist, writer, Brian Michael Bendis. And this one, it happens to be by Brandon Peterson. I think they're doing a great job so far on this series.
Right. It is. It does well at local comic book shops. Local comic book shops, Chris, like Age Ultron because it sells comics.
Mm-hmm.
And
the only thing I'm worried about with this book, that I worry about with all Brian Michael Bendis books, is that the series is going to end and it's going to have some sort of cliffhanger where you're going to have to buy the next series. And every Brian Michael Bendis miniseries is like that. Whether it was Secret Invasion or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And I'd never liked that. So I'm hoping that this one doesn't end this way. This is, of course, book 8, so it's not quite done yet. But we'll see where it goes from here.
Let's hope it doesn't. Let's hope Mr. Bendis has learned his lesson.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's getting hate mail. I'm sure the powers that be at Marvel are saying, hey, Bry. Can you step into the office
Bry.
Yeah. When you end this thing, try to tie things up.
Yes.
Right? And let's hope he does. Age of Ultron, Chris, number 8.
All right.
Is in a big pile at your local comic book shop.
Big pile. Speaking of big piles, Supergirl, number 20 is out right now. And this also features Power Girl. Of course, Power Girl was in issue number 19, and this was where Power Girl got her old-fashioned costume back.
Yeah.
And now they've got the old costume again in this issue of Supergirl. And it's Supergirl and Power Girl, and they're facing off. And there's sort of like this slight homage. To
Breasts.
Crisis on – well – yes, there is an homage to breasts, however.
Yes, certainly
this
there is.
I was going to say Crisis on Infinite Earths, where Superman was carrying
the dead
body of Supergirl. Power Girl is sort of lamenting over the dead body of Supergirl in this issue. There is some boobage going on.
Boobage.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Chris, what's with the – you can explain it to me. You understand this kind of stuff. Is the women's outfits with the bottom part.
Yes.
Now, for a while there, the ones that rode up on the side high up to the hip were out of fashion, and they were down lower mid-hip.
Right, right.
And now they're going up high again on this up high hip.
I'm just going to say artistic license. They can draw them however they want. I've also seen them where they're kind of like little booty shorts kind of things as well.
Yeah. Stick with something.
Well, but hey, you got to go with the times, man.
Is that right?
Stick with the age.
Okay.
Come on.
All right. I'm just saying that it's hard sometimes to keep track.
Well, you know what? I think you and I, at our age, we can no longer keep track of what the kids want these days.
No, we don't. Right? We don't understand
We don't get it.
I don't understand those kids.
He-bop and boo-bop. And
listen, I do understand that Supergirl number 20 with lots of breast and some thigh is available at your local comic book shop today.
You know, that's why I love Swiss Chalet. Lots of breast and thigh.
Lots of breast and thigh. Yeah.
All right.
You get some rib there, too.
I'm not so sure what that means.
And that special sauce. Oh, and that dipping sauce.
You know, I do like that sauce. That
you
is
know,
good
apparently
stuff.
The dipping sauce at the chalet
isn't
the fattening part.
No.
It's the skin.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what? I've actually, I remember talking to a waitress once and said some people order like double and multiple, triple helpings of that special sauce.
They get a trough.
A trough.
Yeah,
a trough.
Just get me a trough. All right. Okay. So did I say Supergirl number 20? Is that your local?
Yes, okay. I believe you did. All right. Next up, we have Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher. This is from Dark Horse, and it's by Eisner Hall of Fame inductee Richard Corbin. Now, Richard Corbin, here's a guy that's been around for a long, long time. He's, you know, he did art for Heavy Metal Magazine like 20, 30 years ago.
I remember.
And he's been working for Dark Horse for a long time doing various different books. And here it is. They've decided to do an adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher. Now, of course, for those in the know would know that Fall of the House of Usher was also a movie that starred Vincent Price back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Back in, I think, late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, early 70s,
and,
I believe.
Yeah, so this is just another version of the famous
poem. Do you remember those, the kind of Satan's Girls' School and the House of Usher and all that kind of 1969, 1970?
Yeah, yeah.
Those you could watch those films all day because they had that there's that I don't know what it is, the cinematography, the quality of the film, that sepia tone color and stuff. It's just it dates it so much to that time.
Oh, absolutely.
And, but they're the most enjoyable films.
They really are. People look at those and say, oh, it's old. They're so much fun to watch.
Oh, my God.
They're melodramatic and they're a little bit overacting.
Cheesy
and fun. And
I
love them.
Hey, Chris, listen, Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher from Dark Horse is available at your local comic book shop today.
Yes. All right. So last up, we've got...
one more?
Yeah, we got one more.
Look at you.
Now, you're a fan of cartoons.
Of course I am.
Well, there's a cartoon on it started on Cartoon Network. I don't even know if you... I think we get it here in Canada, but I'm not entirely too sure. But it's called The Regular Show. I don't really know how to properly describe it. It stars a blue jay and like a squirrel.
I remember that show, yes. And my kids love that show.
Do they? Okay, so and there's a kid.
I think it's terrible.
I love it. I think it's great. And there's a white gorilla and a guy that looks like a gumball machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the show. Anyways, Kaboom Entertainment has decided to license it and is now coming out with a comic book version of it. And I love one of the first issue covers has sort of an homage to Action Comics number one. Lots of homages going on.
And to pizza.
And to pizza, yes.
Hey, so these Kaboom guys, they're good because
they're
Adventure Time stuff is just flying
they
off
do,
the shelf.
Adventure Time,
stuff is flying off the shelves. And the regular show, I think, is going to be a hit. Which is good. What's good about this, too, is I think – correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. Is this aimed at younger – young?
I think it is, yeah. I think it's aimed at a younger – I think it's aimed at a younger crowd, although it's probably a teen book where, you know, you could – it's really meant for teens.
Yeah.
Or even a little bit younger. You know, adults would probably enjoy it if they read it.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, too, where like a 10-year-old thinks he's cool but because it's kind of aimed for 15-year-olds.
Right, exactly.
But, I'm watching. This is cool. My mom's letting me, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So, hey, The Regular Show, number one from Kaboom, is available at your local comic book shop today. And, of course, Chris just pulled out seven of these things. But listen, there are 500 of these things coming out today. What you have to do is you have to get your butt down to your local comic book shop. You have to peruse the new this week and check out all the others that are new this week.
Absolutely.
That's all right. We ask. We don't ask for much.
We don't ask for a lot.
Is that asking for a lot?
No. And you know what? If you showed up here free comic book day, you would have had free comics while you're here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what?
So don't tell us anything.
That's right. All right. Listen. At the beginning of the year, we did say we would have a Krantz Spider-Man song every episode.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my best to make sure that we have that.
Good.
So here you go. This one's called The Throne Room.
You know what? Listen, I've often entered a throne room with that sense of foreboding,
of doom.
Yeah. What's going to happen?
Yeah, it's true.
You're going in there fearful.
Well,
optimistic, but also kind of a little nervous.
Well, I figured we talked about the fall of the House of Usher, and I thought that would be a good sort of way to set the tone.
Yeah. The throne room. It's an intimidating place.
It really is. It really can be.
Chris, all right, where does the throne room segue us into?
Comic Culture Mailbag.
Oh, nice.
Mailbag. So this is from John in Burlington. John says, "Yo, dudes. What's up?
Sup, G?
Last week you talked all about who your favorite artists were, yet for some reason you didn't talk about what kind of books they were working on. There are some people in this universe that don't know nearly as much about comics as you schleps do. So can you please explain yourselves next time you talk about artists?"
Let me explain.
That's from John from Burlington.
John, you need a trip to the throne room. Get it out of your system, pal. And relax. I don't know, Chris. Like what's Ditko working on now, though? I think
okay, but people don't even know who Ditko is.
So I see.
Steve Ditko worked on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, what he worked on.
Well, remember we were talking
about, sorry. Yeah.
Remember we were talking about who we'd want to meet.
Yeah.
You said Steve Ditko.
Right.
Well, to the average person out there who's not a comic book fan, they don't know who Steve Ditko
is. That's their
is.
Problem.
Well, okay. This is what John's bitter about.
Yeah, Bitterman.
Bitterman.
Yeah.
So John said, so we talked
John
about,
Bitterman.
So we talked about Steve Ditko. He was one of the founding co-creators of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Frank Frazetta. I don't even know how you describe Frank Frazetta.
He did a lot of stuff in the 50s for basically, like Westerns
and science fiction.
Jungle and science fiction stuff. Yeah. But he's more, I think...
he almost became a fine artist.
Yeah. And he's more noted for his covers, especially the Conan and the sword and sorcery stuff,
right? Yeah. And we talked about Jack Kirby, who co-creator of Captain America.
What's his name? Bill from Burlington?
John Bitterman.
John, if you don't know who Jack Kirby is, pal, okay? That's all I got to say.
Look it up. Google it.
Google it.
All right.
Jack Kirby did everything and anything. And I think he pretty well created 98% of the superheroes that exist.
Pretty much.
Right?
Pretty much.
So that's who Jack Kirby is.
All right, listen.
We apologize.
Sorry, John Bitterman.
All right. Next time we'll be more. I guess what you and I have to see. He is right, though, Chris.
Yeah.
You and I are so well versed.
Yeah.
It's easy for us to lose track when we talk, and we got to remember how dumb most of the listeners are. You know what I mean? Like, these guys, these poor guys and girls, they don't know.
Half of the audience just changed the station.
No, they didn't. They became enraged.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that they're not as smart as we are.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
So, you know, there's time.
That was from John Bitterman from Burlington.
John, thanks for the email.
All right, listen. Next up on the Hit Parade, we've got to talk about I went to TCAF on the weekend.
Did?
Yeah, so for those, you know, again, we have to explain ourselves.
Right, again.
We're just so learned.
I know.
We have to tell the audience that TCAF stands for the Toronto Comics Art Festival.
Right.
Comic Arts Festival.
Yes.
So I went to TCAF on the weekend. Went on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And wow. Okay, so good things and bad things. Good things, great turnout, lots of great artists.
Yes.
Lots of, you know, I got to meet Bill Amend, whoever, I don't know how to say his name properly.
Make
the,
amends.
The guy that created Foxtrot for the Daily Comic Strips.
Yes, got
to meet him. That was really cool.
I like Foxtrot. Good
yeah,
series.
It's one of my favorites.
Yep.
And he did a little sketch in one of my books for me, so it was really nice. Jim Rugg was there.
I got
to hang out with him for a little bit. He was the creator of Street Angel, and he did the book Aphrodisiac.
Right, I remember.
So
yeah,
he does a lot of indie kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get a chance to talk to him for very long, but the Hernandez brothers were there. I didn't get a chance to see Art Spiegelman because. And this is where I want to talk about some of the bad things.
Yes.
In my opinion, and I could be wrong, I've been known to be wrong before.
No.
The things that I didn't like about the show was that there was – it took place at the Toronto Reference Library.
Yes. Right on Yonge Street, just north of Bloor.
Exactly. Right. So the Toronto Reference Library isn't conducive to having everything that show needs to have.
Yes.
So what they've decided to do is they have – you know, satellite places where you can go to the Marriott Hotel or you can go to somewhere else. And you go. So basically, if you want to get any of the big names to sign your book, so Art Spiegelman was signing at the Marriott Hotel at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Right.
So you got to leave the Toronto Reference Library and, you know, walk
your butt over to the
Marriott
Hotel. Get your
butt over to the Marriott Hotel. Or where, I mean, there was like 7 different locations.
Yeah.
Right? So I understand they're trying to make it more, you know, everywhere, right? You know, hey, it's great. Hey, it's encompassing the whole city. Hey, this is fantastic. No, have everything all in one place because, you know, I don't want to have to spend half my time walking around Toronto to get to see an artist.
Yeah,
or just
panel. Big B, my shop, Big B, we were part of TCAF. We had Michael Walsh here.
Mm-hmm.
At the store, so
that's right. Yeah. Hey, so you gotta get on the bus.
You gotta get on the bus. You gotta
Hamilton.
Take a plane.
Yeah.
Go to Hamilton, see Michael Walsh, and then head back to TCAF.
So,
but I see what you're saying.
Right.
You know what though? Is that sour grapes a bit, Chris? Is that being spoiled? You're talking about a free event.
Okay. Oh yeah. Well. Okay. So which brings me to my next point.
All right.
I like the fact that it's free.
Yeah.
However, it's free,
yeah.
Everybody and their brother goes to it, whether they like comics or not.
Mm.
People are like, oh, I heard about this comic book thing. It's free, so I might as well go there.
Is this free comic book day today?
You know. And here's the thing. So, you know, they've got the Japanese gay porn manga master artist doing Joe Hentai, whatever his name is, doing sketches and
Suzuki
stuff like that.
Suzuki Hentai.
Yeah, and doing sketches.
Ichiro Hentai.
I think so. I think that's his name. Ichiro Hentai.
Okay.
Godzilla. So and then you get some mother bringing their 8-year-old, you know, kids inside, and you get Joe Hentai doing sketches for people, and it's like, I don't know if that's so appropriate.
Mom,
you know,
what's she doing with that snake?
You know, and I saw things like, you know, not, you know, I understand that, you know, the comics medium is great for everybody, but however, I think there needs to be a place and a time for everything. I don't need to see books about menstruating, you know, and
Who needs that?
Like comics about that. I'm not so sure I need to see that. I understand a forum for everybody to kind of talk about things.
Uh-huh.
However, when you're making it a public, free access to everybody, you know, kids are going in there and they're talking about stuff and they're seeing all these kind of artists and stuff like that. I'm not so sure if those are the kind of books that need to be seen by everybody.
Fair enough. I agree.
I'm not trying to be sour grapes. I'm not trying to be a prude, but I think there's a time and place for everything.
You're absolutely right. I mean, if you have, well, it's almost like you need, you know, if you want to see menstruation, go to the second floor.
Right.
If you want to see hentai, go to the third floor.
And these are all on the main floor.
Right. They're all mixed in.
Okay. And
so you got this guy over here menstruating. You got this guy over here hentaiing.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
You got some little kid that wants a sketch of Bugs Bunny.
Or whoever,
Yeah.
Which
whoever
brings
they
me,
draw.
And now, second floor, which brings me to my next point.
Second floor, lingerie.
Menstruation.
Menstruation.
So, this.
And toys.
This show has outgrown the Toronto Reference Library. Mm-hmm. It was far too packed. I couldn't get to any of the tables. Mm. I could barely walk around. Mm-hmm. The second floor had a room like the I can't remember what they call it. It's called the aviator room.
The aviator
Whatever it's called.
The aviary.
There was a lineup to get into that room.
Into the room.
Just into that room right. Because it had a capacity, and once it got to capacity, you had to wait in line to get into a room where there was more artists and people and stuff like that who were maybe sometimes doing sketches, sometimes not. For example, Faith Erin Hicks was in that room.
Love Faith Erin Hicks. Great gal.
Yeah, great person. She had the biggest lineup of everybody that I saw
at
the weekend, by the way.
Nice.
So I just didn't like the fact that, you know, okay, I understand you make it free, but now you're making people wait in line to get into a particular room, which I didn't like.
Yeah.
You know,
they're not making people wait in line. It's
well, you're
just
right.
The course of natural selection.
But if you want to go and see Jim Rugg or Michael Cho or whoever it happens to be, then you're waiting in line to see these people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess.
So I think this show has outgrown its capacity at the Toronto Reference Library.
Yeah. Listen, the boys, I'm sure Chris is listening.
I'm sure he is, yes.
Chris Butcher from the owner of The Beguiling. And I'm sure, you and I being so well-versed at stuff.
Absolutely.
I'm sure he's going to take a little advice from us.
Of course.
Because you and I are like gurus.
We really are.
Thing. Yeah.
We really are.
What can we tell Mr. Butcher right now? What can we tell him?
You know what? You know what I would say? And one last point.
Sorry.
Is that there wasn't a single superhero artist there.
Yeah.
So
I think they do that on purpose.
Well, I've heard rumors that if you
if
you draw superhero comics, you're
out.
Not allowed in.
That's it, buddy.
You know,
you're out.
And you know what? If you're all for diversity and trying to encompass everybody in the comic book market, then that's like
I want a superhero menstruating.
Yeah, exactly.
I want one now.
Exactly.
Sorry, pal, I can't do it.
Why not?
I don't know.
You know,
I'll get kicked out if I do it.
And this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to encompass all comics and make it a big comic art festival, but they're not really – they're still exclusionary.
Right.
Which
I
don't like.
I understand. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, okay. So
– So I think – I personally think the answer is you
– The Sky Dome.
Have it at a hotel. Have it at a hotel con. Mm-hmm. Charge $5 to get in. It's almost free, but – you're charging just enough that people who don't really care about comic books won't go in just because this happens to be something to do that day, right?
Uh-huh.
So people that really want to be there will still pay $5 or even $10 or whatever it is, and you'll limit the number of people that'll pay for the hotel room itself. Why not, right? Like, just make it more accessible to the people that really want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? It could be another idea. Let's say they have these what? They have these how many creators are there? 50?
There was more than that.
100?
Easily.
Okay.
There's 19 different countries.
Right. I say charge $200 to get in. And then you have all the creators divvy it up.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that they might have to do two sketches that day, but they don't give two craps. Like, that was easy. And they still take their money.
Most of them weren't even doing sketches. Most of them are just trying to sell books.
One of those guys.
They're almost like they're too good for it.
They're like Immonens, Bittermans.
I don't know. I don't know. I just got a bad vibe from it. And, I've been going to that show for 10 years now.
Yeah.
I went to the very first one where it was held at a church where 600 people showed up.
Yeah, I remember.
Right?
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, it was at a tent. It's gotten bigger and bigger every year.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely outgrown the Toronto Reference Library.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's all I'm saying.
All right. Noted.
Noted. Duly noted.
Noted.
Duly noted.
Duly
all
noted.
Right, you know what? I feel like we've been talking for a little while here. We should probably have a quick musical interlude.
Yeah, we need one.
What do you think? Is that a good idea?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's have a quick musical interlude, and let's go with a little bit of the old
hour show, Chris. 1 hour show.
Okay. Let's. How about we go with
perfect.
Here we go. Star Trek.
Thank you.
Chris, that's good stuff.
Did you like that? That was sort of like the 60s psychedelic Star Trek.
Swinging 60s. Chris, that, of course, takes us to industry news, right?
Yes, industry news.
And
it is
industry
brought
news,
to you by...
What is it brought to you by?
The Niagara Comic Con.
Yeah, they bought the whole block this
June 8th and 9th.
At the Scotiabank Convention Center in beautiful Niagara Falls, Ontario.
That's right.
Right.
Full of ballet and gambling.
Full of ballet and gambling and comic books.
Yes.
Hey, listen. We promise you, well, we don't promise you, but there will be no menstruation. And there will be superheroes galore.
Absolutely.
If you want superheroes.
That's where you should be.
You're going to get superheroes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, at the Niagara Falls Comic Con.
Sounds good. All right.
Yeah, let's talk about DC Comics.
Okay.
Announcing 4 more cancellations to their titles, I guess.
You know what? It seems like not all the new 52 are doing as well all the time as they would like.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like, you know, even though Legion of Superheroes, which had, I don't know what the thresholds are for DC anymore. I remember they used to be like 15,000, 20,000. Maybe they're 25,000 a month that they need to sell. Legion of Superheroes was doing 16,000 and 15 were ordered for the month of April. Mm-hmm. So that's been chopped.
Mm-hmm.
Dial H for Hero has been chopped. Demon Knights has been chopped. And Threshold has been chopped.
Wow.
So, you know... These are, you know, they're not doing nearly as well as they had hoped, I guess.
Well, I'm telling you, not one of those 4 has any Batman in them. That's the problem.
You know, the only one I feel kind of sorry for is Legion of Superheroes.
You know what? It never got a dinner, that title.
It really didn't.
How many times over the years, I'm going to give you a quick history lesson.
Okay.
Adventure Comics number 247.
Yep.
First appearance of the Legion of Superheroes.
Okay. That was with Cosmic Boy Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad.
Lightning Lad and a great concept. It took off right away. They were very popular. They ended up taking over what title did they take? Superboy.
Superboy.
Yeah. And then it went to Legion. And actually, what's the guy's name? Keith Giffen?
Yeah. He had a great run.
He did a great run in the late 70s, early 80s. They were actually probably at their peak at that time in terms of they held the title. They actually held the title for a while.
Yep. I agree.
And I don't know. It's just, you know,
never got it back. Never got it back.
Never got it back.
They had a decent run in the early 90s.
Yeah.
It lasted 50 some odd issues, something like that, and then it died again. And they've tried to resurrect it and bring it back, and it just never seems to get quite catch on the way it should.
You know what it is? I don't know why I'm saying this, but it's tied to the Superman family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the Superman family as a family of books doesn't seem to do as well as the Batman family books, right?
You're right.
And it's too bad that it's not somehow tied to the Bats family.
Part of the problem with this book is that they want to see – it's funny. It's like you buy a Batman book and you want to read about the Joker. Right?
Yeah.
So people who buy Legion of Superheroes, they want to read about – you know, all these old Legion of Superheroes like the Furious Five or there's some sort of gang title that they want to read all about their these villains, right?
Right.
But nobody else gives two craps about them.
Exactly.
So it's hard because you're trying to satisfy the old guys that like that series, but at the same time trying to rein in the new readers, and just never seems to work.
So let me ask you this, Chris, because you're a well-versed comic person.
I like to think so.
Yeah. So are we are we losing in comic books? Are we losing variety? Are we slowly losing variety? Are the publishers afraid of, like, in order for the comic book world to have variety, is variety only going to come from independent publishers? Are the big houses, Marvel and DC, going to concentrate on the ones that sell for them and not offer us variety?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely
right.
I think you are. You know, you look at a book like, say, Invincible, right, by Image Comics.
Yeah.
If Invincible was published by Marvel, I don't think anybody would care about it.
Exactly.
But because it's an independent, it's published through Marvel, published through Image, people would buy it. You know, they don't have any expectations for it.
Yeah.
So therefore, they're more open-minded for it. I think if the same people went ahead and let's say the same creative team did Legion of Superheroes, but called it something else and mm-hmm. published it under Image, it might do extremely well.
Right.
So right. I think that there's a certain expectation from Marvel and DC that they want to have the core DC universe, the core Marvel universe storylines going on at all times.
Yeah. See, the way I look at it and the way I hope that they would look at it is I think there is – you know, as a publisher, you want as wide a breadth as possible.
Yeah.
So you want a whole lot of titles. And it's almost like, hey, you know what? Your Batman is selling well. Let it supplement a support your Legion of Superheroes.
Right.
Keep the Legion of Superheroes yep. going. Yep. Okay, you're only selling 15, 17,000. You know, your Batman's selling 180 or whatever.
Yes,
you know
yes.
what I mean? Keep the Legion of Superheroes. Yep. In the long term, you want a lot of properties published every month as a publisher. You don't want to go down the route of just basically doing a narrow-minded decision based on that particular title's monthly sales.
Right.
You want to look at it as a wider picture. Hey, what are we offering the reading public? If you don't pay attention to what you're canceling.
Yep.
And you only pay attention to sales.
Yep.
3 years down the road, it may surprise you. You may one day go to a meeting in the morning and look at it and you might go, holy crap, our 60 titles we're publishing only have 17 characters.
That's
in
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's a danger.
Well, you know, I think the problem that DC is facing is that they don't really seem to have a good, you know, when was it Karen Berger? Or I think that was her name. When she was sort of in charge of the whole Vertigo line of comics. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a really good grasp on, you know, variety and the adult community and that kind
sure.
of thing. It doesn't seem like DC has that Vertigo grasp, that Vertigo idea where you can have variety in your comics, and that seems to have spread even in the regular DC line of comics. There doesn't mm-hmm. seem to be a whole lot of variety, and I don't know if that's because they're not really letting things flow as far as letting them, you know, like, so Legion of Superheroes, like, it's up to issue what 20 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you should let it go a couple more years before you cancel it, because maybe you might get a really great creative team on it that might be able to push it past that threshold.
You're preaching to the choir, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
All right, listen.
Let's talk about something that is doing well.
Yes.
And that is Iron Man 3.
Iron Man.
So Shane Black's Iron Man 3 topped the weekend box office again.
Again.
With
2 weeks in a row.
Over $72 million on the weekend.
That's the North American domestic box office.
Yep, and that now has brought it up to North American domestic box office total of over $284 million.
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Very impressive.
Worldwide, it's close to a billion.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I don't want to get into it too much, but you know what's even more amazing is that Baz Luhrmann is the director of The Great Gatsby.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He also did Moulin Rouge Romeo and Juliet.
Sure.
So anyways, he has now done The Great Gatsby, and that, you know, I got to say that has, you know, almost got really close to Iron Man 3. They made over $51 million on the weekend.
Wow.
That's not bad for a novel that's been around for I don't know how long.
The 30s, probably.
Yeah.
Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah. So you know what? For a story that people have known for a long time, yeah, I think that's a really good job for good old Baz Luhrmann there.
Obsession. Well, Great Gatsby's all about obsession.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Great for Iron Man, though. Great. Great news for Iron Man.
Yes.
It's still going strong. It's great. I mean, I'm so happy that Iron Man is just off to a flying start.
Oh, it's doing very, very well.
What's up next? Superman, I think.
Superman is up next,
I
believe.
Really,
and then
really, really pumped for Superman.
Then we've got Wolverine.
Yes.
And Thor.
So, hey, listen, Iron Man is doing its part.
Yes.
And we, as a comic book community, are doing our part by going out to see it.
Absolutely.
And so
I want to see it again. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
You really got to see it. It's a really great book. I know.
A book?
You
know, is it a good book?
Really great movie, sorry.
Right.
Really great movie. Really got to see it.
Okay.
And my young buck, Andrew Roebuck here, our engineer, is agreeing with us.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
He's just giving us the Don Cherry thumbs up.
Yeah, great. Really good movie.
All right, Chris, let's keep going here with the industry news. I got some great news to report.
All right.
Now, Chris, this is Smallville. TV show about Superboy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
It has Supergirl.
Oh, it only lasted for about 12 seasons, but
right.
Yeah, okay.
It has Supergirl played by a Laura
Vandervoort.
Yeah, and she's a beautiful girl, great actress. And she has just signed on to be the voice of the Blue Fox on the Captain Canuck webisode animated series.
Nice.
That's going to kick off July 1st. From Captain Canuck Inc.
I like it.
So she signed on, and then everybody at Captain Canuck Inc. is excited about having her be the voice of the Blue Fox.
I like it.
I think it's great.
I think it's great.
She joins Chris Holden Reed and Paul Amos, who are playing, voicing Captain Canuck and Mr. What's his name? Mr. Gold, I think.
Mr. Gold.
Yes. That whole project is shaping up beautifully.
I think
having Laura come on is just injecting some great energy into the project.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I'm really looking forward to the end result.
Now here's the main question.
Here's the
question.
Now, thing.
I know you have some connections to the Captain Canuck, Enterprise.
Enterprise.
Will we ever get a chance to meet this young Laura Vandervoort?
I hope so. I hope – you know what? I'm going to try to have the people at Captain Canuck Inc. Ask her if she can – you know, if she's in the area to make an appearance at the Niagara Falls Comic-Con.
That'd be great. I would like to meet her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would be great to see her there. Maybe you and I can have her on the podcast.
Hey, that would be something else.
Yes.
That'd be great. Good
we'd
idea.
We have to film that one, though.
Yeah, right. Because that's the only way people will tune into
right.
it.
No, hey, listen, I would love to hear what she has to say.
Me too, yes, absolutely.
And it's great news for Captain Canuck, great news for Canadian superheroes. And let's hope it's as good as it's promising to be.
Yes. All right, listen, let's take a quick musical interlude here. And let's go with, I don't know. How about we go with the theme to Superman?
Those tubas.
Love that. Love that.
That is a beautiful,
John Williams.
John Williams. Yo, okay. Let me ask you a question.
All right.
So John Williams,
yep.
You know, the greatest composer of the late 20th century in terms of movies.
Absolutely.
You know, will he get, you know, because pop culture is dissed by everybody.
Yes.
You know, the fact that he does this beautiful music, but it's attached to Raiders of the Lost Ark and Star Wars and Superman and Jaws, does he not get a fair shake in terms of critical stature?
Yeah, you know what? I've had this discussion with other people for many, many times.
Many times.
And here's what I've always said.
Yes.
Okay, so we look back on the great composers of our time,
mm-hmm.
Bach and Amadeus and Beethoven.
Mm-hmm. Sedaka.
I'm not so sure if Sedaka would be
okay.
in there. But anyways, from my knowledge, they were composing for plays and for musicals for theater at that time.
Theater.
Right? The Magic Flute.
Yes.
You know, whatever it happens to be. So I don't see a difference between what they were composing for and what guys like John Williams is composing for music today, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a gathering where they're all going to a movie,
yeah.
Whereas before it was a gathering and they're all going to a theater.
A play.
Right? What's the difference?
Nothing.
Right? It's a musical score
right.
to that particular play, theater, orchestra type mm-hmm. thing. I hope, and I don't know for sure, but I hope that guys like John Williams and even, you know, I got to say, like even like Danny Elfman or what's his name? Horner, Hans, James Horner, Hans Zimmerman.
Han Solo.
Sure.
All those guys.
All those guys. I hope that they would get the same kind of credit. Obviously not like Amadeus, but like not like Mozart.
Rock me, Amadeus.
But you know, I hope that they would get some sort of credit, like the way those guys did.
Yeah,
in the past,
sure.
Right?
Like you know, and we've all seen through the movies and read through the literature too, is those guys like Bach and Amadeus too. They were trying to write pop songs. They were trying to write songs that people would like.
Absolutely,
right?
That's right.
You know, they were trying.
They weren't doing it just for solely for
the artistic
measure
mathematical
of it. They were
pleasure.
Doing, they thought, you know, here's something that people will enjoy, right?
Yeah, they're looking for melodies. They're looking for catchy,
that's right.
Catchy hooks, catchy choruses.
So there's no difference.
No.
And so people, I mean, okay, I'm gonna shock you here for a minute.
Shock me, Amadeus.
But I was a little nerdy back when I was younger.
Get out.
I know, and it's hard to believe.
Hard to believe.
So I used to listen to a lot of classical music.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to a lot of this kind of stuff.
Kill the rabbit.
Kill the rabbit. People used to say, why don't you listen to real classical music? Because I'd be listening to this orchestral kind of stuff. You know, the pop kind of stuff. And I'd say, well, there's no difference. Right,
mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. You know, whether I'm listening to Carl Stalling from Kill the Wabbit,
or
Amadeus,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Anyways, that's my two points.
I agree with you. That is at the end of the day. At the end of the day, Chris. That
end of the
is
day.
Good, beautiful music.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
That was a nice movement.
You know, I had a good movement this morning.
Yes, you did. Certainly. All right, Chris.
Target, Disney.
Protests. Oh, what's up with that?
Protests are targeting
Disney. You were
telling
me about that before the show. So Disney's in apparently some hot water.
Yes, for two
things.
They've
done something wrong.
Once again, Disney has, you know, for the many good things that they have done.
They're so wholesome, Chris.
They really
are.
They're
so good.
Yeah, until you work for them, from what I hear.
Until you work for them?
Okay. So, listen.
So what did they do wrong?
Okay, there's a movie called Brave that came out, I think it was last year or the year before that.
Uh-huh.
And they have a character, Merida. So Merida is based on a Scottish movie or a Scottish theme period, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And Merida is, you know, like a princess, and she doesn't want to be a princess.
A bonny lass.
She wants to, you know, go out and hunt and do, you know, tomboyish kind of things.
Sure.
Well, I guess, you know, the original look of the character was sort of an everyday kind of
tomboy girl
going out and having fun.
Right.
Right. So now Disney has gone around and they've made her a little skinnier, a little sexier, wearing fancier clothing.
Ayo.
And no longer has the bow and arrow. Now she's unarmed. So
Looking
now it. They're trying to make her a little more Barbie-esque, I'll call
right,
it. Right,
right, right, right.
So the people that did not like this, they garnered over 107,000 signatures saying, "We do not like this idea. We do not like this idea. The reason why Brave did so well is because of the initial idea that she was who she wanted to be. She wasn't the typical princess who was all dolled up and wearing fancy clothing and had the perfect body.
Yeah.
She was a realistic teenage person.
Right.
Right?
Teenage person.
Teenage girl.
Yeah.
So they went back and they changed her around again, and now she's back to the way she should be. But I guess the original director on Brave was Brenda Chapman. And
Brenda Chapman.
She said the makeover was a blatantly sexist marketing move based on money.
Okay. Stop right there.
I will.
Okay. So I own Matilda. What's her name?
Merida.
Waltzing Merida.
I own
the property to her, and I want to sell stuff.
Yep.
Right? So a blatantly sexist marketing move based on money.
Yep.
What the hell else is it going to be based on other than money?
Okay. Well, you're absolutely right. You're you know what? When you're right, you're right.
Yeah.
And when
they
you
can do whatever the hell they want with Waltzing Matilda.
Sure, they can.
They can do it.
Now, let me ask you this.
What
if they decided to take Superman
and
make his cape green, make him fat, and give him blonde hair?
I'll tell you what.
How would you like it then?
No, I'll tell you how I like it.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you. They won't do it because it won't sell.
What if we lived in an age where that was the hot thing? If you were fat and blonde and
then I would say do it. I would say do it if it's going to sell. I mean, these guys, Chris, they want to make some money. If they have their guys up in the glass towers there figuring out what new look is going to make it work, and the purists out there are going to say don't change it. I can name you 800 characters, of which I probably can't name you one, by the way, that have morphed and changed over time to I won't even say reflect the times, but I'll say to perhaps improve the chances of financial success.
And did it do well?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Making this up as I go here, buddy.
Okay. Anyways, my point is –
you know what I'm saying.
My point is I'm glad that they changed it back for the
integrity. Oh, they changed it back?
They changed it back for the integrity
chickens.
Of the character.
Listen.
All right. How do you like this idea?
Go ahead.
So Disney was also in hot water because they decided to try to trademark it says here Disney withdrew 10 trademark applications for Dia de los Muertos, which is
Dia de los Muertos,
with the name of the Mexican holiday called the Day of the Dead.
Basically, wasn't that a Ramiro movie?
Yes, you're right. It was actually. Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Well, you actually know something.
Well.
I think he was trying to be funny, but it backfired.
No. Shecky, right. But our producer Shecky, who, by the way, if I could interject, will be back next week.
Oh, good.
Shecky texted me today.
Okay.
Said, guys, buy a bottle of scotch. I'm coming back next week.
But why would we buy a bottle of scotch?
Well, apparently because we should be so enthralled with him that, we have to buy him something to drink.
Right.
So
that's of course after the show.
Yeah.
All right. Listen. So Dia de los Muertos is a Mexican holiday, Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Disney was trying to capitalize and trademark a holiday term. So
that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Because we're so Anglo-centric, I'll call it. If we were to take that, say, Christian-centric, if we were to take that same idea and say, okay, you know what? Disney is going to try to trademark Christmas.
Yes.
Right?
The nerve.
You can't – that's a big holiday for the Mexican country.
Right.
You know, you can't trademark that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You can't all of a sudden say, hey, you know what? Now we own Christmas.
Uh-huh.
We're going to own Christmas tree. We're going to own Christmas lights. Anything that has to do with Christmas, we're going to own it now.
Wow,
that's basically what Disney tried to do, and people were up in arms and said, you know what? We won't take it anymore.
Wow, we're mad as hell.
That's right.
I won't take it anymore. I'm going to beat you with this piñata stick. If you try that again. All right?
Probably sing La Cucaracha.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow, that's dumb. Like, I mean, Disney, okay, for as smart as Disney is, they're pretty stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, to do that with Matilda, and then to do that
Waltzing
with
Matilda,
the Night of the Living Dead thing there, it's like they've lost touch with reality.
I agree. All right,
so you can have too much money is my point.
Yeah, you know, you've just brought up a great point. Speaking of losing touch with reality, have you? You're like
I'm close, Chris.
Soda pop and drinks and stuff like that, right?
Love it.
Okay, so Fanta,
with my gin.
Do you remember Fanta?
Oh,
it's still around. Fanta orange, Fanta grape, Fanta cream soda, all that stuff. So Fanta has decided to publish a graphic novel aimed at teenagers.
Fanta, the soft drink,
the orange soft drink,
the orange.
Well, yeah. So they launched a new campaign aiming at teenagers, saying at its core, Fanta seeks to be the champion of play for teens. And science tells us that teens need more play. And that was by the VP of Fanta, Wendy Clark. So they basically said, hey, I hear these graphic novels are big these days.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we put out a graphic novel that showcases
about Fantapop.
And then we'll have, you know, like play skateboarding.
Teens.
And doing all that teen type stuff.
Yeah.
Talk about being out of touch.
Yeah. Chris, you know what? You know what? Like these executives, especially say at Fanta, but even at Disney, you know, what they don't realize and what we hope to convey to them and tell them is that they're pretty stupid. And teenagers are pretty damn smart.
Yes, I agree.
Like, teenagers are so far ahead of the curve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Their eyes are rolling when they see this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you and I are falling more into the Disney side. Like, we're kind of, you know, on the fence or whether, you know, this is too advanced. Teenagers are going, what the hell's wrong with you people?
Oh, why would you possibly
What are you thinking?
Yeah.
And like you said before, I think, you know, this might appeal to a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And yet, but they're targeting it at 14-year-olds.
That's right, yeah.
Right?
And
it's like let's make a commercial about how much fun we're having on skateboards drinking Fanta.
It might as well be you and I on skateboards
Fanta. Pretty well.
You know, and every panel of I saw clips of that book.
Uh-huh.
Every single panel had Fanta Pop in it somewhere.
My God.
It's just a blatant marketing tool that is just going to sink right to the bottom of the ocean.
Wow. I mean, plugging things is just like, you know, it could go too far.
Yeah.
By the way, we're on 93.3. CFMU, McMaster Radio, Hamilton's award-winning radio station.
Right. Okay, listen.
All right.
We don't have much time left.
We
don't have much time. I want to talk – skip that next one there. I want to talk about DC women trading cards.
Oh.
Okay.
DC women trading cards.
So very quickly, you know – remember back in like the 90s where people were buying trading cards and collecting them?
Of course I did.
Well, for whatever reason, Cryptozoic is putting out a box of trading cards where you can buy packs of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Women of Legend. And it's all the female characters from the DC comic universe all in trading card form.
Is it like a Benchwarmers?
You know what? I just don't get it. Do people even collect trading cards anymore? They actually go to the store and say, oh, can I get a pack of DC women? I'd like to go to some kind of store and ask for a pack of DC women.
Tell me about it. No, Benchwarmers still sells.
Really?
And the only way these will sell is if they're porn hentai.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And 3D.
3D. And scratch and sniff.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. otherwise they won't sell.
No,
won't sell.
No one will care at all.
No, like trading cards, the whole card thing is done.
Yeah,
you know, it's over. Like it's the ship has sailed. Yeah, and this is the worst idea possible. Chris, you know, this show we focused on a lot of bad ideas.
Really did.
Yeah, and it's almost like you and I need to go into consulting.
I think we should.
No, really. I mean, every stupid move by these multi-conglomerate corporations
have too much money.
Yeah, we need to contact them.
Yes,
and say you guys are pretty stupid.
They should be contacting us. Hey, you know what? We don't want to make a stupid move. We'd like to talk to you about it first.
Right, yeah. And we'll, you know, ask teenagers.
Because they know what's going on.
They know what's going on, and they'll tell us. But, yeah, that's like dumb, and dumber.
I don't get it.
What?
I don't get it. All right, listen, you know what? Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for today, Walt.
All right, Chris, Comic Culture is produced by Shecky Feldstein, a.k.a. Marty Berthelmer. Who's back next week, by the way, and engineered by our young buck, Andrew Roebuck, who is sitting to my left and to your right. And for comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Scroll down to the very bottom where the comments field is and just type in your comments. And Chris and I will reply to each one of them individually.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That's it. Is that it? No. We can also be heard on
Get the Point Radio.
GetThePointRadio.com.
Are we still on iTunes too?
Oh, we're on iTunes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I believe
you never mentioned that. So I, was
I think we're on public radio in the States as well.
Oh, really? Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but sure.
PRI.
All right. Listen. We do honestly say you really should go out and support your local comic book retailer because they've got lots of great things. If you're interested in finding out more about comic books and or literature of any kind, check them out. They do great work.
All right. And as Chris said, go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have a great day.